Leo, and here we go. Another episode of We Talk Music is on the air and in your ear. Once again, I am Martin, and I am joined by the King of the Casters, Mr. Brett Podcast. And Brett, we have a great drummer today. He's our guest, so why don't you tell everybody a little more about him?
That's right. Well, besides the fact that he's a great drummer, which he drummed, of course, for Life of Agony and Type O Negative, now he is a guitarist, he's a singer, and he's a songwriter, and his band, A Pale Horse Named Death, is releasing their new album, Infernum in Terra. Actually, just released it. Sal Abruscato. Sal, how are you?
I'm doing very good, guys. Thanks for having me on board.
Well, we are super happy to have you on board. I mean, I've been listening to your music for many years since I was introduced to you back in the Bloody Kisses Type O Negative days, so it's fantastic to have you on. I mean, Infernum in Terra is such a great album, crushing good songs, and so let's talk about it.
Thank you so much. Sure.
So first off, I mean, it's 2 years after the last album. So let's you know, what brought this one into light?
I was pretty much gearing up. I wanted to do another record. I felt the last record was a little bit subpar to my expectations. And I was definitely focused on, you know, some bigger production and techniques. And this is actually the first album where I entirely done everything myself, with the exception of the mastering at the very end, which was done by Maor Applebaum in Los Angeles, but engineered, mixed, recorded, produced by me, which I had started sketching this record January of 2020, right when we were starting to hear rumors about this virus. So I just was like, I wanted to get another record out. And I had all these fresh ideas, and I wanted to do some couple of different approaches. And I'm really just honestly just happy to see the response that it's gotten. And that's the end game for me. That's the reward, is hearing the fans, the journalists, all the radio folks, you know, podcast, everyone saying they like it and they think it's better, it's good. This is the payback for me. So I'm really stoked about it. And in fact, you called me. I have my digital workstation open right now because I've been tracking rough ideas for the next record. Yeah, because, you know, when I was done with this record, I finished this record in February, and we around March, and we mastered, we finished. So I've been sitting around with this record for like 6 months.
Yeah. Or,
you know, so it's kind of, all right, I'm ready to go. And this record, actually, the way this record turned out has proven to me that I'm on the right formula as far as production and music, that it inspires me to just like get right back in it.
Wow. So that what was the difference then, I guess, in your feelings after When the World Becomes Undone and now into Infernum in Terra?
Well, as far as sonics, I wanted it to have much, much more clarity, much more crystalline type of separation between the grittiness. So you've got the heaviness, you've got the grittiness, the old school fuzzy sounds and tones on the guitars. But I wanted everything to sound much more separated and clear, that it pops into your face. And I was disappointed that that's what was missing on the previous record. Plus, I had a lot of fans just complain to me about stuff. And it really got to me. And I was like, you know, they're right. I gotta redeem myself with the next record. I have to do things my way. And also the vocals felt was necessary for them to be much more upfront the way it should be, and that was on the production side. As far as music, I wanted to have some more aggressiveness to some approach, but retaining that retro vibe, that 70s, like a record that you could have heard this stuff being done by Black Sabbath in the 70s. Or we brought in even more piano and orchestral elements, like tubular bells and some choir moments. And I just like embellishing. I like orchestrating. to the point where it's just a complete complement and sweet mixture between the heavy and the sweet. So this is where I'm angled at. You know, this is where I got tunnel vision with that, this new approach.
Yeah, it's really interesting because one of the things that I love about this album is all those extra embellishments that you bring up. I mean, there's so many really neat sounding elements, and I think it does bring the music out that much more. But you know, the riffs are super heavy, and I will say that I love those.
I'm a big fan of the heavy riffs with like the sweet melodies, whether it be the vocals or like a melody guitar. Or even piano, organ, on top of that heaviness, it's like putting sugar in your coffee. You know, you just, I feel for me, that's how I like to do things. You know, like I don't want to be this brutal sonic assault of just all heavy all the time. You know, of course, I lay down, you know, thick drums, you know, thick bass, thick guitars, heavy riffs. And then on top of that, I like having the ear candy or the earworm, shall we say, that kind of grabs you, hooks you, and you don't feel exhausted by just only heavy riffs. You've got this melody that's carrying you from beginning to end, and there's this uplifting side to this quicksand feeling of the heaviness, you know?
Well, how difficult is it then when you're doing all the instruments to satisfy the sound that you're looking for? All the pressure's on yourself.
It is no pressure. It really is. It's second nature for me. It's been so long because, like, even in the years that I was a drummer, I was always like the closet guitarist. I was always a closet songwriter, and for me, I like it that way. I consider myself like the Trent Reznor of doom. You know, like I have. I have great admiration for musicians and artists that can just have this multi-faceted and talented approach that what's in their head they can actually get across on all the instruments. And I've always been a big fan of that, and I've always been working on that. And this project, which really started out as a project, it was never intended to be a live band 11 years ago. And one thing led to another, and I needed people to play live. But from the first record, I literally was doing everything, you know, just about, with the exception of guitar solos. I don't do guitar solos. That's not my forte. I do melody guitars. I do all kinds of stuff. But it's no pressure. It's fun. For me, it's fun. I seem to be fortunate enough to be prolific in a way that I don't get stuck often. And if I do sense myself getting stuck, I just walk away. And I'll walk away from something for months at a time. And then I'll come back. And it'll be just this whole new fresh approach, and then it just falls out. So it's fun to me. It's not pressure at all. A lot of work sitting there listening every night, but in the end, all those hours I put in, like with this record, for example, the proof is in the pudding.
Mm-hmm. Oh no, absolutely. And how long then, you know, did it take you to write the album? What is like the songwriting process for you then?
Well, I'll give you the example that, okay, so in January of 2020, I started, like, you know, jotting down some ideas on my system and started recording some stuff, little bits and pieces. And then I'll, you know, I just leave things alone. And I was doing that because then as we got into March, New York got shut down, and along with a lot of other people. And so I jotted stuff every now and then when I was in the mood. You know, I'd come up to the studio at 10 o'clock at night. I would open stuff up, and then I'd get this idea. Okay, I'll put that down. And then arranging would happen a little later on. And then I took, like, the whole summer. I didn't touch nothing. I got caught up with I had gotten a classic car, because I'm into muscle cars. So I worked on the car all summer. And then when we got into like September 2020, literally like one of the songs, I'll give you an example, like Shards of Glass, that was written in October 2020. That song just literally came out in like 5-10 minutes, where I had came up with the verse, came up with this chorus idea, which is the extension of the verse basically. And the melody, you know, I'll just mouth, like I'll say any kind of word just to keep up with the syllables and the syntax to make the melody happen. And it just all came out in like 5-10 minutes. Kind of same thing happened with like When the Crows Descend Upon Us on the first record. Then you got Reflections of the Dead, which was the last song I wrote. Same thing. I think it was in between something I was doing. I came upstairs, I threw the guitar on, turned on the amp, and then boom, those two riffs just fell out. And then as I was listening to it, the melody just was natural. And of course, I honed it in, and then the lyrics came into play and the subject matter. And it just, there's moments where a whole song will be born in just minutes. And that's why I feel like mood has a lot to do with it. Like if I'm in a bad mood, then I don't have too much luck. If I'm bothered by something, like say, you know, something happened during the day or somebody pissed me off or something broke, that's not going to really help me. It boggles my brain, gets all fritzed. But if I'm in the right creative good mood and I'm feeling good about everything and I'm relaxed, it just falls out of me. And literally that's what happened. And then over the holidays I rounded out all the soundscapes, all the lyrics, started recording vocals over the Christmas period, holidays into January. And then by the end of January I was pretty much done with all the vocals. I was just doing all the coloring stuff with the harmonies. And I spent like February mixing, and I was going back and forth with my mastering engineer and getting him ready. And he gave me some insight, you know, because I would run the tracks by him and get some of his opinions. And after a couple of little, you know, adjustments here and there, then I sent it off to LA. And then he ran all the music through all this old, like old school hot vacuum tube analog equipment, because of course, everything is done digitally nowadays. We don't have the beauty of tape or analog equipment back in the day. So he felt it was a very old sounding record. So he ran everything through analog equipment to kind of obtain that kind of warmth and beef, heavy weight kind of feeling that analog gives you. And that's kind of in a nutshell, like literally like a year later, I was already end of March. I sent the record to the label and they were just kind of floored by it. And here we are.
It must be a great feeling, though, for sure, not only to deliver an album that you're happy with, to deliver an album that, you know, the label's happy with. And so far, I mean, the fan reaction, especially from the music video, seems to be wonderful.
Yeah, the video. Oh, man, that's my favorite video ever. that was done by the same director. His name is Joel Nilsson. He did the video on the last record for Fell in My Hole. And he's based in Sweden, and the video was shot in Sweden. The forest is the is outside. These are the forest and woods outside of the city of Gothenburg. And you know, like whenever you see these cemetery shots, or even in the previous day, this was in Gothenburg, and the actress was Swedish, and everyone involved. And he just has such a great vision. And when I sent him this song, kind of gave him some insight, and he. The lyrics, and I kind of gave him my two cents about what I was seeing, and we went back and forth, and he nailed it. He nailed it so hard that the video hasn't even been out just over 3 weeks, and it's like almost, I think it's like 118,000 views already. So I'm really, really happy how that turned out, you know. And I like videos to be kind of like a movie. I'm not really into the performance video of, you know, four guys, five guys on a stage banging their heads. I mean, we did that on the second record. We did a performance video and I was still like, okay, it's cool, but whatever. It's no different than going to see the band at a show. And maybe people like that, but I like being, again, I'm a big fan of like Trent Reznor's approach. And a lot of times he's done videos that are very movie-like or cinematic feeling. I like to have the viewer enthralled like they're watching a short video, a movie, I mean. And, of course, the song is like 5 or 5 minutes. So it feels like you're watching a short film.
Oh, absolutely. No, I mean, you know, definitely successful in that regard. Now, you know, what are the thoughts of more videos and perhaps even like kind of carrying on like a bit of a story throughout?
No plans for any additional videos yet due to budgeting and things like that. I need to pick the people's brain about that, because I would personally love to have a video done for the song Slave to the Master, which is a very broken down, stripped down song. I would love to have some type of cinema, and I brought this up to the director as well. So we'll see, you know, over the winter what happens, if we can pull that off and what can be done. You know, what really sucks is I can't even go over there so easily. Like, Europe is just so, everything's so backwards with everything, with restrictions and COVID and all this stuff. It's just making it everything hard to go anywhere. So, but hopefully it would be nice to see, have another video done for this record.
Definitely felt to me like this is an album that's needed right now. I think feel like you've captured the way society's feeling in a lot of ways. Kind of, was that a goal?
I mean, I've always just wrote about, you know, miserable feelings. but the title has, the title was also influenced 50% by the pandemic. The other 50% was because we were, at that time, we were approaching the 10-year, which is already 10-year anniversary of the first album, and Hell Will Follow Me. So I wanted to have the word hell somehow incorporated in the title to commemorate the anniversary of a decade of the first record. At the same time, as we all watched all the craziness on TV or news or family stuff going on, that we, you know, people were losing loved ones, people were passing away, children were kept home from school, people were kept home from their jobs, no one was allowed to go anywhere and meet their friends at a bar, and I just felt like, well, everyone's just living some form of their own hell on earth, one way or another, whether it's death or financial or spiritual, because people weren't allowed to go to church, right? So it was, everyone was living some form of hell, and again, it just seemed like hell on earth. But to me, the title felt a little bit too simple and predictable. So I looked up a few different translations and then found Infernum in Terra. And I just said, this is it. The way it's spelt, the way it looks awesome. It looks beautiful. It feels so biblical. It feels so end of times, like there's a finality, you know, in the works. I think it is good timing. People are in a rough spot right now, and there's a lot of turmoil around the world, socially and politically. There's a lot of angry frustration that people have, and you know, the people that are responsible for this situation have never come forward and even said sorry. You know, unleashing this kind of craziness on the earth, on the world, and not telling nobody. You know, it just really, even I'm angry, I'm furious, but I won't get political on it, because that's a whole nother day of talking.
You know, how long then have you kind of, you know, gone with the darker side of the lyrics? Like, has that always been you?
It's been since day one with the first record, and it's always been my personality. I always have this constant battle of seeing the bleak side of things rather than the positive side. So it's a curse, you know, it is a curse, because for some reason I'm able to write miserable stories, miserable feelings, or depressive, suicidal emotions and feelings, but maybe that's what keeps on saving my ass, basically. I have it all the time.
Oh, sorry, I thought you were finished there. Lyrics, the last step for you, when you're writing and crafting a song?
They kind of happen as I'm working in the studio. Like, I keep a notebook. I have a notebook right now. Like, it's always, you know, I use it actually as a mouse pad. I have a notebook. So while I'm working on, like, a part or a piece of music, if I get hit with a brainstorm of a line or a subject matter or the theme, I'll jot it down and scribble. And I'll scribble all these different lines and verses, and then I will clean it up, and then of course later on type it, and it's always a work in progress, because sometimes it'll all come at once, but then sometimes it's happening in drips and drabs as I'm, say, let's say, like, I'm tracking guitars, and now I'm listening back to what I did, and all of a sudden I'll hum along some melody, and a line will blurt out of my mouth, and I'll be like, okay, I got to put this down. Let me write this down real, like, in 2 seconds. And I grab my book and I write it down, and that's it. It's just, you know, my book is full of all these words and lines of different songs. And that's what I do. It's not like I wake up and say, well, today's lyric day and we're going to write all the lyrics for this song. You know, it just, I let it happen, the subject. And then when I have the subject, and especially if it's something emotional that like from inside, it usually will come out flowing as a story, because now this is me maybe just blurting out these feelings and ideas that are just falling out naturally. And again, it's all about syntax, syllable placement, because everything works with timing. When it comes to lyrics, you have to have it all fit. It is all, of course, all very poetic in a way, the way everything has to be placed to work in a song. So it's as we go along kind of theme.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, it's funny, you've mentioned some of my favorite songs, like Shards of Glass, Reflections of the Dead, and A Slave to the Master. Like, this is one album where, usually in your other albums, it's just like, I've been able to pull out a song where I'm like, oh, that's my favorite. But in this case, those, like, between those three, like, I don't even know. I can't tell what my favorite is, and that's a good feeling.
Oh, that's great. That's great to hear. I'm glad to hear that.
So then, you know, for you, like, how do you feel, how do you know when a song is done, especially with the embellishments, and then how do you put the package together in the sequencing?
Again, I'll take a break. Like, I'll take a break for a week, maybe put it on my my iPod or something, that, you know, I have like an old iPhone that I use as an iPod. I'll go on my car or my truck, and I'll listen to how things are sounding out there. I will make like an order of tunes and then listen as I'm driving somewhere. And if it feels also like I'll have the idea in my head, like, I think it should be this, 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 that. But then when I'm driving and I feel it flowing good, that's how I get to know that I'm not, you know, it's the right tracking as well. Try to balance things out, like one really aggressive or loud sonic heavy song. Then I'll try to break it up with something that starts out a little bit chill and mellow, and then, you know, just to have these ups and downs with the dynamics and not have just one solid assault of half a record just all loud in your face and then all the quiet stuff later on or before, and try to balance it out so it gives the listener's ears also a little bit of a sensation of rest, dynamics. You know, that's why you'll have like the quiet, like, you know, piano starts or the piano ends, kind of just to soothe the ears for the next assault. And one of the cool things I did on this record that I made very prevalent was just literally having that old school feedback, that thing that you hit the pedal and you hear the pedal turn on and right before the song starts. I really got hooked into that on this record. To me, it feels very organic, like you're in the room with the music or a band, and they're hitting their stomp box and turning on their stuff right before they start the song. So I tried to give a very organic experience as well. And it's, again, just sitting back, listening with fresh ears. You got to let your ears rest, and I'll come back and listen, and I'll be like, you know what, I want to add this, or let me change this note, or let me do that. And it's a gut feel that, you know, it's done, you know, or that's enough embellishment, because there is such, you can go overboard. And then it becomes, everything is, you don't want tracks to compete with each other and cancel each other out. There is a saying where less is more. You don't need 1,000 guitar tracks, you know. So less is more, and you want to have things space out a little bit, because otherwise they cancel each other out. So as you're mixed, things can disappear, and then mastering, it becomes more of a problem with the EQing of the mix. So you have to be, it all comes with experience too. And I've been learning over the years myself. You know, this is always an ongoing learning curve for any musician, artist, engineer, you know, DIY type of person.
And Mayer Applebaum is the person who did the mastering. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What
he contributed was, right when I was starting to mix, you know, he's not one of these guys that just wants to get paid, do the job, and then that's it. You know, he we literally did different versions of masterings and mixes, and he pushed me to with fine tuning certain frequencies, of cutting out certain frequencies. That was a big key change and had a lot to do with why this album turned out so clear. So we were talking for like a few months before the actual mastering, before the record was delivered to him. And he's just so honest. I mean, the guy really puts his heart into it. And he made me, I ended up remixing the whole record again, because, we needed to just fine tune a couple of the levels. And he said, you know what, if I was you, why don't you take out 70 hertz here or 60 hertz there, and cut this out and cut that in EQ and listen back again with fresh ears. And so he was very inspirational as far as, like, some of his advice was really key in also allowing me to do the final mix myself. And we have a good understanding. He loves the music. He loves all this darkness. He loves the vibe. And then he took the mixes and he ran it through all this old school gear and all this equipment. And it is also, he has equipment that he's created that's on the market now that literally does some of this stuff. And he's just an overall great guy, and he's done a lot of great records. And I consider him a friend, actually, because I got to know him on the previous record a little bit, but I wasn't as hands-on with him. This record, we were back and forth a lot. He would call me out of the blue and check up on how things were going, and I would send him a track. It was very, very good guy to work with. Very good, very humble, very honest.
I think that, like you say, the proof is in the pudding. I mean, when it came out, and I know we're super close to running out of time, like, I just want to ask one last quick question. Like, do you listen to your old works in the car, like, or much before you go into a new album, or you just want to start fresh?
As far as musical inspirational, I start fresh. When I was like mixing this record, I did A/B with the previous records and heard the differences that proved to me that I was on the right track. But I'll go through a spin where, I'll listen to a boatload of Beatles. I'll listen to, I had recently gotten into some doom bands like Windhand and Acid King. So I'll listen to them. They actually have been in a weird way inspirational to me too, influential. I might go back in time and listen to some of my stuff that I like from back then, because I'm not really current with the new bands. I'm not really a fan of a lot of new music. But as far as listening to my own material, I don't refer to it when it comes to writing or getting ideas.
Mm-hmm. Well, Sal, this has been awesome. I love the fact that you're so in-depth and you really think about everything. It makes things so wonderful to talk to you. Please tell all the fans where they can find the new album, how they can keep up with you.
You can find the new album. You can get it off of napalmrecords.com. You can go to longbranchrecords.com. I think it's called lbrshop.com, or look up SPV Entertainment. You can get it on Amazon, of course. You can get it on the digital downloads on iTunes. I'm sure, like, for the few local record stores that are left around the world, hopefully you could check them out. I do know, although it's available on all the common big tech outlets, I guess, like Amazon and stuff. But definitely there's still some splatter of vinyl editions. We have two different splatter vinyls that are also available, and bundles with shirts and things like that, where you can get from the lbrshop.com site. Again, though, if that's too hard to remember, just type in longbranchrecords.com and it'll take you to their site, and you can order it from there. Or napalmrecords.com, also, since they're affiliated together now. You can also find the links on our social media, facebook.com/APHND, A Pale Horse Named Death.com, the Instagram.com/APHND also has the link in the header to click on. Bandcamp has it. Basically, everyone that should have it has it.
Awesome. Well, Sal, A Pale Horse Named Death, Great new album, Infernumentera. Thank you so much for being on the show, and we wish you nothing but the best and look forward to all the new music that you put out.
Likewise. I appreciate you. Thanks for having me on board, and I hope to meet you guys, and I'll be more than happy to do an interview anytime you need to.
Awesome. Well, we look forward to it. Big fans, and all the best.
Awesome. Have a great day, guys.
You too.
Bye.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.